is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Ori.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And next up, it's Eyes Wide Open with Janessa and SJ. Let's bring Janessa on to reintroduce herself, her show, and what's up for today.
Hi, welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living in a multidimensional existence. We hold the power of perception, and this power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, the seen and the unseen. Hi, I'm your host for this evening, Janessa Finley Ford. I went from supervising felons to marrying one, largely thanks to being able to reprogram my brain and repattern my life. And I now live a life that I fully love. And I'm so excited to bring on our guest for today. We have a special guest, Nicole McCalla. I hope I'm saying her last name right. Most of our communication has been written, so Hooked on Phonics hopefully works for me. Nicole is a digital nomad who left her home country at 23 and never looked back. After living in China for 4 years, she's now fully nomadic and travels the world full-time. I'm getting goosebumps just reading this. It's such a contrast to my own life. So I know there's going to be so much wisdom, wonder in her time with us today. So while running her business, creating content, from the road, she travels. How amazing is that? Nicole works with brands creating content and loves educating other nomads on finance and tax optimization for unconventional lifestyles, which I am all about, the unconventional life. So, Nicole, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Janessa. Thank you for that amazing introduction.
You're welcome. So it is the tradition of Eyes Wide Open to let people really build some rapport with us and come to know us through humor. Do you have a funny story to indulge us in this afternoon?
I do. So this is the question I was going back and forth with over the last week, thinking I live such an insane life at this point in my life. I know there's so much more to come.
Did we lose Nicole? Did we lose me? Nicole,
we still have
on the
you.
Switchboard. Okay, I was like, can
back.
You confirm?
Yeah. Okay. Another day at the office here. Okay, you're back on.
Are we all good? I apologize. I think that's my Bluetooth headphones. I apologize for that. Yeah, so I'm going into my story, which I really debated. I was thinking, you know, I've lived such a wild life at this point. Why can I not think of one funny story? So, you know, there's many things that come up. And one thing that I thought was very interesting, I think, to share here, and as we go into more of my story and my background and kind of the reason why I left my home country and what all of that looks like, I've lived in many different cultures throughout my life. And so this story really showcases that. So I'm originally from Canada. I was born in Canada, and my partner, we met in China. He is from Mexico. So we were in Mexico probably about 8 months ago now, and that was the first time that he had actually been back for quite a few years since living in China, and I was meeting his family, his parents. This was, you know, almost 2 years into our relationship, and we hadn't met each other's parents, just to show we live a very unconventional lifestyle. So we get there the first day. His whole family was there. The mariachi band was there to welcome us coming from the airport. And it was amazing. And then the family leaves. the next day in the evening, the family comes back, and, you know, Mexican family, it was all the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents and big extended family, not what I'm used to in Canada at all. And so the second evening, they come back, we all have dinner again, and they leave and go home. Third evening, they come back again. And I was just like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of family time here. So one of his aunts at the end of the evening, she spoke a little bit of English. So she comes up to me and she goes, oh, it was so great to see you again. I'll see you tomorrow. And not even just my initial reaction, not trying to be rude or anything like that. I was like, tomorrow again? Because for me, and I think for many of us in Western culture, we're not used to seeing our family for 3, 4, 5 evenings in a row. I was like, if I see my grandmother 10 times a year, that's been a good year. So it was really funny to just highlight the cultural differences. And then to kind of go off of that, but in the opposite way, when my partner came to Canada, we were at a friend's house. It was around 8 o'clock at night, and there's a knock on the door. And so I think myself, my friends, all of us who were from that Western culture from Canada were thinking it's a telemarketer, it's a solicitor, not a telemarketer, a marketer, or it's a solicitor, like, don't open the door. And he immediately goes, oh, it's the cousins, the family's here, the cousins are here. So it was funny. It ended up being the neighbors. They were Indian and they were celebrating a holiday. So they gave us some gifts, which was really nice. But it was really funny to see his perspective of, you know, the evening, 8 o'clock at night, the family, the cousins are coming over, the primos. And for me to just have so much of that family time in Mexico, which is really not something that I'm quite so used to. So it was definitely a little bit of a culture shock on both of our ends.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. Just family dynamics alone can be that way, but then add in the cultural lifestyle value differences. I don't know that value is the right word, but that would be a bit of a shock, especially if you weren't prepped for it. So when you were with his family, are you bilingual? Was there translation? Were you able to communicate with them very well, or were you more kind of to yourself because of the dynamics?
So I do not speak Spanish, but however, living the lifestyle that I have lived for so long, I lived in China for 4 years. I've now been outside of my home country of Canada for 6 years now, and I don't really plan on returning. I've gotten very used to not really understanding the language that's going on around me. When I was in China, I would get so used to kind of just tuning out the people on the metro and walking down the street because I didn't know what they were saying anyways. So you kind of get used to tuning it out. And then it was so funny because every summer when I would go home for a few months when I was living in China, I'd go back to Canada and I would get so excited to go to the big city, Toronto. I'm from a very small town, so to go to Toronto and to just be able to eavesdrop people on the metro. And it sounds so silly. And it's a thing that I think everyone in, you know, a country where they speak the language takes for granted. But for me, I was so excited to know what they were saying and I could understand and listen to all the conversations because that was a luxury that I never really had living in China. So for me now, I'm very used to not really fully understanding whatever conversation is going on around me. And, you know, I've figured out ways to kind of mitigate that or, different ways. There, it is nice because I do find at some level, everyone knows a few English words or speaks a little bit of English, especially younger people know some or are somewhat fluent in English. So that is a little bit nicer, but that was definitely a challenge. Yes, his mother does not speak a word of English and I don't speak much Spanish. So everything would run through him as a translator.
Yeah, that would be so interesting, especially for a first time meeting. I feel like that puts a whole different spin on first impressions.
Totally.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that personal part of your life. That's very intriguing. The language was one of the questions that I was really curious about as well. So I can't imagine it's something that just becomes part of the new norm and it doesn't really feel that foreign or out of sorts after a little while. So I do want to hear more about your story. And real quick, before we dive into that, those who have been following the series here, every other week you get SJ and I together, and every other week you have been recently hearing my series about all of the systems and how we got to now. And whether you live in the U.S. or you live in a different country, a lot of that information, the principles of it, applies to many different nations because of the transnational aspect of these policies and motivations. So I feel like it's so important to know that we have choice. Part of our empowerment is, you know, creating this life that we desire and being at choice. And so I didn't want to leave us in a space where maybe we're seeing things for the first time or having different knowledge about the world we live in and being upset about it, right? Because we talked about how one of the methods for keeping our consciousness lowered is being in an emotionally stirred state, because when we're really emotional, we can't think critically. When we can't think critically, we can't identify having these choices. And what I love about Nicole's story is she really highlights how she had a vision for her life and she made it happen. So we've also talked about motivation of human behavior, how we move away from pain or we move toward pleasure. And I think maybe Nicole's story is a little bit of a mix of both, but a lot more of moving toward pleasure. So if I struck pain points for anyone over the course of the last couple months in that series, I could not think of a better person to have come on and talk to us about really being empowered, seeing this vision for her life and going after it, making it happen, figuring out all of the details. And for those who feel stirred and called to this adventure and travel, she's going to drop some major wisdom on us here today. So if you would start with, for those who have not heard of the concept of nomad, because, you know, I'm fifth generation on my family's farm, so I know some of my listeners probably haven't even considered the concept of nomad or living that lifestyle. Can you just briefly tell us what that is? And is there a difference between expat or not?
Great question. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So first of all, what is a nomad? You'll hear probably the term heard before is a digital nomad. I feel like since COVID, that term in particular has become very widespread, very well known. But essentially what it means, and there are many different ways to live a nomadic or a digital nomad lifestyle, it really means that you are working from your laptop and you can be anywhere in the world, or sometimes if you're working for a company, anywhere within a few specific time zones. But you can travel, you can be in many different countries over the days, months, weeks, and you are essentially making all of your money online. There are many ways to do that, but that is kind of what being a digital nomad is. And I think a lot of people aspire or want to be nomadic in some way or another. A lot of people in my community and people that I speak to, but there isn't really one right, quote unquote, right way to be nomadic. It's what fits best with you and your lifestyle. There are, you know, RV life is kind of considered to be nomadic nowadays. There's lomad, which means that you are maybe staying in one place for 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, traveling a little bit slower. For myself and my partner, we like to be a little bit of nomads, but we get a little bit of itchy feet if we're in the same place for quite a while. So we'll usually spend a month or two in a country or in a city that we really like and then go to the next place. So that's a little bit about what a digital nomad is and how we choose to live that nomadic lifestyle. And there is a difference between a digital nomad and an expat. So I have been both, actually. And an expat is more when you far from one country, one culture, and then you go and live in another country, but you live there. Where being nomadic, you don't per se live in one country, which many other issues arise from that, including tax residency, all of the things. It can be somewhat complex, especially if you're working for a country and you're not physically, or if you're working for a company, sorry, and you're not in the country that that company is operating out of. There's many fine details, but being an expat is more so living in one place, having a home base. When I was in China, I was teaching, so I was an expat in China, and now I am more of a digital nomad.
I am so glad I asked that. So I had made nomad, digital nomad synonymous in my own mind, so I'm glad we started off with that clarification. Thank you for that. And then I am really curious in follow-up to what you just talked about. You had said something to the effect that if you guys stay in a place for essentially like too long, then you get that stir and you're ready to move again. What is too long for you? What does that look like? Like months, a year? When do you get that itch?
Yeah. So typically it's after a few months. I would say anywhere from 2 to 3 months, because there are usually quite a few different cities within one country that we want to explore. So for example, right now we're in Argentina, so we are currently in Buenos Aires. We usually fly into the capital because that's just where the airport and kind of the main hub is. We like to always check out the capital and then potentially go into some smaller, but not very rural, but still smaller cities to check those out if there is anywhere popular to be or to check out at that time of year. So typically I would say about 2 to 3 months in one place, and then 3 months, 90 days is a sweet spot because usually our passports will give us 90 days visa free in one country. True. And then after that, it's time to go. So that's the question I get asked a lot too, is what do you do for visas? And right now, I don't know how much you know about the digital nomad space, but there are increasingly more and more digital nomad visas that countries are rolling out. Of course, you know, digital nomads bring a lot of money into an economy, so very understandable. I think there's over 100 now, which is wild, from countries that have been popping out over the last 2 or 3 years, I would say. However, I get asked a lot, do you have a digital nomad visa? Do you want one? What does that look like? And for us, we travel quickly enough that a digital nomad visa is not beneficial. I actually don't really love the term. They're called digital nomad visas, but it's really more of a mid to long-term stay visa. These visas are usually good for 1 or 2 years. So you're really loving that country and wanting to stay there longer term, whereas we appreciate the country, the cities, but we don't stay for long enough that we would need more than those 90 days. And then I like to not do everything there is to do in one country because I want to be able in the future, in a few years time, to come back. I don't want to feel like, oh, I've conquered that entire country and I never have to go back. No, I always want there to be something more to come back to.
Oh my gosh. I feel like there's so much richness and culture. It would be hard to conquer any place in 60 to 90 days, but maybe I'm an eternal optimist. So I think I have other questions about visas and residency and travel, but I think I'll save that for a little bit later and pivot back to the beginning of your story and kind of walk through a little bit more chronological of the why you chose to leave Canada, and then there was China, and then what? Like, can you get into a little bit of where you've been and what was that impetus to step into this lifestyle?
Yes, absolutely. So, all right, a little bit of a background on my story. So I was born, raised in Canada, Western country, and I think most people living in a Western culture or brought up in a Western culture can resonate with the fact that growing up, what I was told and shown that you were supposed to do with your life was you were supposed to get a good university college degree and get a good corporate job, move up the corporate ladder, get the mortgage, have the 2.5 kids, get the dog, you know, like all the things, get married, have a big wedding. We all know what that looks like. And so I got my university education. I started working a corporate position. I had always wanted to work in the big city, which for me was Toronto. I'm from a very small town of about 1,000 people. So I always wanted to be in Toronto. I did get a corporate position out of university, but it was in my hometown. It wasn't in Toronto. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take this and work my way up. And I was 21 years old, something like that. And position for less than a year, and it was a great position. And I started thinking to myself, is this really all that there is to life? You know, I started having these thoughts that I've been in this role for less than 1 year. I'm 21 years old, and I, at 21, know what the rest of my life looks like, basically until retirement, minus a few vacations and, you know, a few things that may happen that are a bit out of the ordinary. We go to Mexico on holiday for 2 weeks, you know, the whole life that we're sold. And at 21, I was like, that cannot be it. I will not feel fulfilled. I know what the rest of my life looks like. And so I started thinking of other ways that I could change my life, that I could live my life that wasn't on that trajectory. And I also never felt fully tied to Canada, if that makes sense. I don't really know the right way to put that into words, but it just, I never felt so patriotic or so, this is my home and this is my country. And, you know, it's funny now, even when I see people here in Argentina, for example, they're all very united by football or soccer and they have such a passion for their country. I never really had that. Yes, Canada is great and it afforded me to live a very great lifestyle and my family, but I never really had that like passion. Even now, you know, Canada Day was a few weeks ago and it was just another day for me. So I started looking at what other options could be, how I could change my life, because I knew nobody was going to make that change for me. Nobody cared enough to change my life for me. I had to make that change for myself. And so I started thinking, you know, what's the easiest way that I can just go to any other country and see what it's like there? For me, the worst thing that could happen was I didn't like it somewhere else. I came back to Canada, I regrouped, and then I left again and did something different. That was the worst that could happen, which isn't that bad. So I was like, I can do this, whatever it looks like. I started looking into teaching. If you are a native English speaker, I'm sure probably a lot of people know or know somebody who has left and taught for a year or two and then come back to their home country. So I started thinking, okay, I want to go to South Korea. I found this amazing recruiter who was Canadian, and he recruited for Korea, but he also recruited for China, and he was trying to sell me on China. And I was like, dude, I don't want to go to China. It does not interest me. I want Korea. And of course, he eventually sold me on China. And so I was 23 years old in 2017. I left Canada not knowing. I had never really traveled on my own except for, you know, an exchange. But that was a little bit different. I had never been to Asia. And so I was like, okay, I guess we are going to Asia alone at 23. Had no idea what China was going to be like. Could you imagine? Like 6 years ago, it was just wild. So, but I knew the worst thing that could happen was that I would go back to Canada and kind of regroup and then figure out what my next steps were from there. So I moved to China at 23. I ended up really loving it. I met a great community of people. I essentially loved everything except for the work that I was doing. The teaching was not something I was overly passionate about, but everything else was amazing. And so I ended up staying there for 4 years, which was not in the plans at all, but I did really like it. I was in Shenzhen, which is right across the border from Hong Kong. So the metro connected Shenzhen, and we could just metro 2 hours, be in central Hong Kong. Really amazing experience. However, in the end of 2019, we started hearing some rumors of a virus happening in the north. And I remember a colleague of mine saying, you know, one person has died, and we didn't really think much of it. So January 2020 came around, and it was Chinese New Year. And so Chinese New Year, we would get an entire month off, which was another amazing perk of living in China, to travel. So I was traveling Asia, as were many of my friends and many other Chinese as well, were traveling when COVID got really bad in China. And this was the first country that COVID got bad in. You know, looking back on it now, we're like, yeah, it got bad everywhere. But January 2020, it was only in China. And mm-hmm. I remember seeing all these pictures. I'm in Thailand and seeing these pictures on WeChat of what it's like in China and grocery stores being completely bare and everyone in the hazmat suits freaking out. And I was like, oh my gosh, And I don't know why I didn't have the hindsight to think, oh, if it's this bad here, it's going to get this bad everywhere else in the world. So, of course, I flew back to Canada because I was like, it's safe there. There's no COVID. And then I'll go back to China once this has passed, not even thinking that this could globally happen. That was insane for me to even think about. So I go back to Canada. I unfortunately ended up getting locked out of China when they closed the border to residents on March 28, 2020. I woke up that morning and was like, oh shit. My whole life was in China and I could not get back into the country. I had a job there and I was planning to move up the corporate ladder. I had an apartment. I had everything I owned. I had a cat. I was really planning to have a life in China. That was my plan. And I couldn't get back into the country. And I didn't know if I would ever get back into the country. And so I stayed at my parents' house, the last place I wanted to be in small town Canada while COVID was happening. And looking back on it now, I'm very grateful for that time. But at the time, it was very stressful. But I realized, and I took the time that I had, because I had never really had that amount of time, I don't think any of us had, to sit there, basically do nothing, and think. And so I reflected on my life, and I realized that what I was doing in China was essentially the exact same thing that I was doing in Canada. I was just doing it in a different country. I was working for somebody else, going to a corporate job, doing the 9-to-5 life. Everything that I left Canada for, I was doing it. I was just doing it somewhere else. So very grateful, like I said, to that period of time during COVID so that I could reflect on it. Otherwise, I don't know if I ever would have made that realization. That may not have ever clicked for me. So I realized, this isn't the life that I want for myself anymore. So again, how can I make a change? And I realized that you could, as many of us did, which I absolutely love, that you could monetize your passion through the internet. And so I started figuring out, what did I want to do? What did I enjoy? What was I passionate about? And what could I do online to make money? And I started building out a business for myself, something that I was passionate about day in and day out that I actually wanted to do that didn't feel like work. And then in October of 2020, there was a very small window for me to go back to China. I ended up going back, being quarantined, having to do blood tests in quarantine. It was a very strict quarantine. Did get back into the country, but this time I got back into the country knowing that I was only going to be there for a short period of time to kind of wrap up my time in China, to say goodbye to my friends, to get all of my things, my ducks in a row. And then I was going to leave and I was going to travel and I was going to have something for myself online. And again, of course, life never goes as planned, which I'm grateful for, but never happens. And so I went back to China and planning to be there for about 5 or 6 months. And then 2 months later, I met my partner, who I had actually met 4 years prior. My first 3 months in China in 2017, I had met him. We met one evening and then we never spoke again. So of course, as I'm planning to leave China, we reconnect and it was like, oh, hey, you're kind of cool. I like you. Great. But I'm leaving China. I did not want to stay there. I had been there for too many years. I knew there was so much out there. And he had multiple businesses there. And he was really planning to live his whole life there. So I ended up staying in China for about a year, which was longer than I had anticipated. And then he ended up leaving with me when we left in November of 2021. And we moved to Istanbul in Turkey. Our plan was to stay there for 1 year. And we realized, we don't need to stay here for 1 year and go back to China. We can stay here as long as we want and travel. So we traveled the whole country of Turkey. Beautiful. I call it kind of my third home now because I feel a big affinity to Turkey. And then we traveled to Georgia and then we did all of the Balkans and all of the beautiful countries there. And we were like, you know what? We can just do this forever. And I really love this lifestyle. And that's kind of how we started our digital nomad journey. And right now, how it's going now? Well, I live out of one suitcase. My partner lives out of one, gym bag kind of. And everything I own is in that suitcase. Yes, there are difficult days when I want things that I just can't buy or have because it won't fit in the suitcase. but we love this lifestyle. There's trade-offs for any lifestyle, so this is the lifestyle that we choose. And yeah, we really have the freedom and the mobility to be wherever we want in the world at any point in time and earn an income online. And it's been an amazing journey. I don't know what the future will hold, but that is what our journey so far has looked like.
It is so beautiful. There's so many things that I want to extract from all that you just shared, but just a couple. The end point that you were talking about really is we all have our rich in our life. And for some people who are planted and rooted in one place, their rich looks like their home, the materialistic things that they have. And your rich is experience. You have so much experience, so much cultural exposure. You've seen so much of the world. Like, your rich is just different and it's inexperience. And those are things, like, when you're at the end of your life, I'm sure you'll reflect and be so grateful that you didn't buy the things that wouldn't fit in the suitcase and you had the experiences. The other thing that I wanted to speak on was listening in the beginning of, I loved your rationalization of just the truth of it. Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? The worst thing that could happen is come back to Canada and then pick another place and, you know, like, try again, essentially. And the reality became, oh, the worst thing that could happen is a pandemic that breaks out in the country I'm living in, and I get locked out of that country where my whole life is. And then you came full circle to the fact that because that happened, it allowed you to have this huge realization that you still weren't living the life and you had essentially just mirrored what you were doing before somewhere else to eventually then move into this life that you do love now. So I love that because sometimes we can get so paralyzed in our fears that we don't keep the perspective that life really is working on our behalf. And we can see it so easily in other people's stories, but then we think in our own, oh, it's going to fail me. This isn't going to work out. There's too much fear. I'm not doing it. So I just wanted to highlight that because it's such a beautiful testimony of, if you do the thing, your wings will, whatever that saying is, like, do it before you're ready and your wings will catch you on your way down, or whatever. People should know kind of what I'm talking about, but just do the thing is my point. So I would love to hear more about monetary taxes, your budget, and also management of time here. I'm really just going to turn it over to you. Of the digital nomadic lifestyle, what wisdom, information, topics do you think would be most valuable to share with our audience here in the next 15, 20 minutes?
Oh, gosh, there's so many things we could touch on. I would probably say ask me what you want me to kind of chat about, because, Eddie, there's so many moving pieces and different aspects to this lifestyle. If you want to chat about, I love utilizing geo arbitrage to my advantage. Mm-hmm. I talk about that a lot when I talk about finance, or whether that be how I chose to leave my home country and kind of optimize my taxes, whatever you want to chat about. I am such an open book.
Let's talk about geo arbitrage and currency exchange, monetary, all of the things that materialistically support you in a bite-sized nugget for people. So for those who don't know, again, let's start with, what is geo-arbitrage?
Yeah, for sure. So geo-arbitrage essentially means, and we all know what this is, we just don't know the word for it. Geo-arbitrage mm-hmm. is when you earn money in a strong currency, and that can look different depending on where you are in the world, but just a strong, good, stable currency. And then you are able to spend that money. And this is what digital nomads love and benefit from a lot of the time. You're able to spend that money in a country or a place where the cost of living is a little bit lower. So your money goes a lot further than if you, let's say, are making money in America, but you're also living in America, therefore spending all of your money in America. Your money goes a little bit less further, especially these days, than in a country like Paraguay, which we were just in, or Buenos Aires, or Indonesia, or, you know, essentially name any country that's not a Western country and your money will go much, much further. So that is what geo-arbitrage is. And I actually, funny story, there's a blog that I love, and I've always been very interested in personal finance. So back around 2015, I was very interested in this blog, and they were talking about geo-arbitrage. And from their readings, I decided, and this was truly one of my main motivators for moving to China at 23 years old, was I was going to move to China, I was going to utilize geo-arbitrage, and I was going to dividend invest. And that was really a big catalyst as to why I moved halfway across the world, because I knew Canada was an expensive country. I knew I could make a really great salary doing, maybe not an ideal job, but doing something in China and having that steady salary using geo-arbitrage and then using that extra money to dividend invest. And so that's what I did. I moved to China at 23 years old, and that was my plan. And this is kind of funny looking back on that. Now I'm 29 and like little Nicole moving to China to geo-arbitrage and dividend invest.
Hey, I love it. I worked two jobs at that age to be able to invest and go on a vacation in addition to my criminal justice job. So I, in hindsight, think little Janessa wish she would have figured out little Nicole's plan, but we get no do-overs. So also along the theme of money is taxes. So what does taxation look like with a digital nomadic lifestyle?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question. It looks, I'm not a tax advisor, I will first of all say, but I have dove into this world just out of pure necessity over many years, necessity and interest, I will say. However, it looks different for every single individual. There is no one size fits all when it comes to taxes for nomads, because first of all, it depends what country you're from. If you're American, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. You're lucky. it's difficult for most Western countries, but America particularly. So it depends what country you're coming from. It depends, are you living in one place for most of the year? Do you have significant ties to another country? Or are you like myself, where we really just travel and we don't have any ties to a country? Some countries like Canada won't let you, and actually very recently Australia just came out saying this as well, officially won't let you be nomadic but they won't let you be nomadic and not pay taxes to their government. If you're living nowhere, then you're still a resident to them, even if you haven't lived there in, let's say, 5 years. So every country is different. Every country is constantly changing their rules, and increasingly now, even in the last year, many countries have become a lot stricter because, of course, Western governments, I'm talking about mostly, they want you to pay those tax dollars to them. So they want you to really not get out of their tax residency system. They will make it so difficult for you. So like I said, there's really no one size fits all. Everyone's situation and where they travel and where maybe they want to live in the future, or perhaps you own property and that can trigger taxes and residency in certain places. So everyone's situation looks different. But for me personally, and we, Janessa, kind of bonded over this, was our distrust for governments. And living in Canada, I had never really critically thought about the government and systems in place. And it wasn't until I was traveling and I was nomadic, even in China, I wasn't really thinking about it. It wasn't until I was traveling and I was nomadic and I realized that I was you have to pay taxes somewhere, usually, not always, but usually you're paying taxes somewhere, especially if you're a digital nomad, you still have to pay taxes somewhere. And so I was paying taxes to the Canadian government, but I was not even spending, in some cases, a single day per year in the country. And the tax rate in Canada is pretty high, especially if you're a non-resident. It actually becomes higher, but at the time I was a resident. So I was just kind of pulled and really dove into what governments are doing and the mismanagement of money. And like, it's a whole rabbit hole. You and I have gone down this rabbit hole in conversations. it could last hours because we don't really ever fully know. And then you introduced me to the concept of the straw man and what that looks like and how governments can really kind of utilize everything that they have to their advantage and being this huge overarching system of a whole country to get you to pay more or to get you to just pay it all, really. So that was a very interesting read. And yeah, I realized, you know, like, why am I paying my money to a country where I don't even agree with a lot of the things that are going on in the country? I don't really want the government to be taking my hard-earned money when I am not contributing to anything, nor am I using any of the services. I'm not using the roads. I'm not using the free healthcare system, which is, you know, I'm going to say free, quote unquote. It is nice for peace of mind. Is it really free? Well, if you're thinking in terms of time, no. If you're thinking in terms of money, I guess, yes, technically it is. But I've experienced amazing healthcare that I do have to pay for that is very fast and very inexpensive in countries like China and Turkey, everywhere else in the world. But that's a whole other topic of healthcare. I was talking to somebody on the podcast today about that.
I was just going to say, within functional medicine, there are some holistic dentistry treatments that practitioners will refer to Mexico in Tijuana so people don't have to go that far into Mexico, because there's only a couple people in the whole U.S. that practice this dentistry. And so you have to leave the country to have a holistic approach for your dental care and cavitation specifically. But I just completely understand how that would be so different in other countries and more beneficial, even though it may seem like we're a more established country. We have better technology or whatever we're led to believe.
And so this has like an illustration to that. So when I was in China, I needed a CAT scan. I had a big problem with my knee. I needed an MRI and a CAT scan and like all of the things. In Canada, I would have, yes, it's a free healthcare system, but I would have been waiting probably 6 to 8 months to get on that list. Just get on like the list and hopefully get an appointment. Whereas in China, 10 days later, I had the CAT scan, I had the x-ray, it was done, I had the results, and I paid about $100 Canadian, which I will take $100 over waiting 6 to 8 months.
No kidding. No kidding. Who wouldn't? Wow. That is, I mean, it really shouldn't be astonishing, but it certainly speaks for itself. So I did want to comment genuinely that I absolutely love your content. Much of your content goes viral. Like, this girl puts real content out into the world. So share with our audience really quick where they can find you, because you share budget and tips and banking and then all of your amazing adventures that you're living in your daily life. But you share real tangible, applicable information and then all of the fun stuff as well. So for people who just want to also follow your amazing lifestyle, where can they find you to do that?
Thank you. I really appreciate that, first of all. And I do try to share behind the scenes of being a nomad as well, because I think nomadic lifestyle can be very over-glamorized and sensationalized on social media. You know, I'm sure we've all heard of a digital nomad on Instagram, and you're working on the beach in your hammock. Like, that's, you talk to any digital nomad, you're going to get sand in your laptop, you're going to ruin your laptop, you're not going to get any work done. The screen is going to reflect the sun. You can't see shit. So like, it's just not what you see online. So I try to have very, yes, things you don't think about, right? It's like, but once you do it, you're like, this is not practical. So I try to be very real and behind the scenes of what a digital nomad lifestyle looks like. Probably most digital nomads spend 60 to 70% of our time on our computers, whether we're working remotely or building a business of our own. It's a lot of screen time, but I love what I do. So I try to share that, and of course, finance and actionable tips for nomads, because finance for nomads and finance for a Canadian living in Canada who can get a Canadian credit card and bank account, they look very different. So all of my socials are Nomad Meeks. Meeks is my nickname. So that's Nomad, N-E-E-K-S, Nomad Meeks. And I'm usually on Instagram, and I have a podcast as well. And those are kind of my two main outlets. I'm trying to get into YouTube more, but it can be a struggle. And my podcast is Work, Wealth, and Travel. And those are the things that we chat about on that show.
Yeah. You speak the truth, too. I just have wanted to do a Zoom call in my backyard or write a blog in my backyard. And the reflection on the screen, I mean, that's real, real talk, because you can't actually do digital work outside. It doesn't happen. Let me see. Where should we go from here with the time that we have left? I think I want to ask you just really a personable question. What do you miss most, if anything, in living your digital nomadic way?
Do you mean miss from being in one place, or miss from Canada, or
any of it? Yeah, from having stability. I mean, you have stability. It just looks very different for what I perceive to be stability in having been raised the way I was raised and have the lifestyle I have. But yeah, from any of that, from Canada, from being able to have all of the things that you would want and buy and order whatever you want. I don't know. There's no limitation on the answer.
Well, I think first of all, you know, as my parents get older, I am no longer a Canadian resident, so I can't just spend a whole year in Canada. I don't want to trigger my residency there. So as my parents get older, I don't think miss is the right word, but I do just try to be conscious of like wanting to spend some time in Canada. I could very well not be in Canada for 5 years and be more than okay with it, but I do want to go back a little bit more often now, maybe every year or two, to see my parents and grandparents and kind of as everybody gets older. So I think that is one aspect of the nomadic lifestyle that can be overlooked. And another one is the small luxuries. And this, I try any nomad who or people, somebody who wants to be a nomad, an aspiring nomad who messages me, I always, of course, you know, I don't have to sell you on the amazing things, but it's the things behind the scenes that you can struggle with, and they're small things. So for me, I have always liked to, you know, healthy most of the time, but I like to have my morning smoothie, and I like to eat not like organic food, but I've been a vegetarian for over a decade. So I like to eat, you know, like my lentil burgers or some kombucha or, you know, something. And I feel like that's very Western, but in a lot of the countries that we go to, those aren't readily available. It's very easy and cheap to find meat if you want to eat meat. Like, the world is your playground, but to eat something that's a little more healthier, maybe a little bit more high-end, not high-end, but that would be perceived as a little bit more costly, it can be difficult to find. So that is a struggle. And then also, like I said about the smoothies, just not having a blender in most of the places we stay. I'm actually, whenever I get back to Canada, and this is another one, is the Amazon. I miss Amazon sometimes because if I want 5 things from Amazon, I can spend 5 weeks running around the city trying to find, in a city that I don't know, like Buenos Aires, trying to find where the stores are to sell them. So I know whenever I get back to Canada, I'll order like a portable blender and bring that in my suitcase, but kind of having those small things that you don't even think about until you're somewhere else. You're in somebody else's Airbnb, or you're in a hotel, or, you know, especially last year when we were traveling, we were in Europe last summer, and we stayed in places that either had a very small kitchen or no kitchen. So you're constantly ordering out or just getting something that you can stick in the mini fridge, and that's your extent of cooking. So there are some struggles, I would say, when it comes to that. Another one is I really wanted this certain shower head, and we travel. Like, I don't have a home to have a shower head. Or, you know, if you want, like, the people who are on Pinterest, it's like, I want this couch and these curtains. Like, that is not my life, because I just can't have that. Whatever I have can fit in my suitcase. And I've also always been very minimalist. I've always really liked to be minimalist. I personally find that when I have too many things, it just gets cluttered, and then my mind gets cluttered, and I can't work as efficiently. And I know it's weird, but that's just how I've always kind of been. So for me, minimalism has just always worked for me, and I've always liked it. So I can live out of a suitcase, where I know a lot of people, my co-host on my podcast, we were just recording today, and for her, she lived in Greece for 1 year because she doesn't want to live out of a suitcase. She doesn't want that lifestyle. And so that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We are two very different people who are both nomads. But like I said at the beginning, there are so many different ways now to be nomadic. It's not just one way of you have to have, you know, the big backpack of 40 liters and be in a different country every month. There's so many different ways to live a nomadic lifestyle. And some people also choose to stay in their home country, maybe 4, 6, or 8 months out of the year, and then travel for the rest of that time. And that is also very valid. It's figuring out what works best for you. For myself, not having a routine every single day and not being very regimented on this is what my morning looks like, and then I go for the walk, and I don't have that stability in my life. You can as a nomad, but it can be a little bit more difficult, and I don't have that. And for me, everything still gets done, the work gets accomplished, I do what I need to do, I know what tasks I need to do, and I can prioritize those. Whereas for some people, if they're not as maybe type A as I am, it can be a little bit more difficult. So it's really just figuring out what jives you and what you really need in that nomadic lifestyle. Or hey, maybe a nomadic lifestyle is maybe not for you. And like I always say, you know, I have friends who are still in Canada and work a 9-to-5 job and work for somebody else. And that's awesome. What I always say is, if you are happy living the life that you have designed for yourself, the life that you have, if you feel truly fulfilled and you wake up every day and it's a heck yes, that's all I want. I don't care if you're nomadic or you're not, or I don't care. I just want everybody to truly be happy in doing what they have done in their life. And I didn't feel that way when I was in Canada, 21, working in a corporate position. I didn't feel that way. So I knew I had to change my life. If others are happy having the mortgage and the 2.5 kids, then that's awesome. I'm so happy for you. But I always encourage people to figure out what your lifestyle design is, as I like to call it, because for me, I knew that that life in Canada was not my lifestyle design. And so I had to critically think about, well, what do I actually want out of life? Like, what is a life if I could imagine anything that would truly fulfill me? And then how can I make that happen? What do the action steps look like to make that life happen?
Yes. I don't think there's any better note that we could wrap up on is, whatever life you're living, whatever that lifestyle looks like, love it. And if you don't, you have choices, you have options. There's so much you can do in this world to make your life what it is that you will love. So moving to the top of the hour, our tradition here on News for the Soul is shameless plugs. Do you have a program or a masterclass or anything that you offer that you would like to extend an invitation to our audience to join you with?
I do have, if you want to reach out to me and have a conversation and potentially work together so that you can start getting your ideal lifestyle design in your brain, figuring out what that looks like for you and then going after it, I do offer that. So the best way I would say to get in touch with me or to really see all of my offerings and also find me on social and the podcast is head to my Instagram, NomadNeeks, and check my link in bio there. I have everything in my link in bio, or head to my website, which is NomadNeeks.com. I also have a blog there where I talk a lot about taxes and finance and travel for nomads. And then I also have an income and expense tracker, which I got custom created for myself because I couldn't find something that worked for a nomadic lifestyle where I could just track everything and know my numbers at the end of every single month. It was either budgeting, which I didn't want, or it was only expenses, which I didn't want. I wanted everything in one place. So if you are interested in really knowing what your numbers look like, whether you live a nomadic lifestyle or not, I also do have that on my link in bio on my Instagram and on my website as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing all that you have. Like I said earlier, and I do genuinely mean this, the content that Nicole creates is amazing. If you reach out to her, you're not going to be disappointed. And let someone else pave the way for you. If you are interested in exploring digital nomad lifestyle, she has it figured out to rocket science. So let her lead the way for you. Life is so much easier that way. For me, you can find me on fiercelyradiantsoul.com, and I just launched a 3-month coaching program that is amazing. So that is what I want to share for my shameless plug this evening. Next Thursday is our next group coaching call with Stronger Together. And of course, I'll be back here next week at the same time with SJ, and we are going to be talking about our soul's calling, our soul purpose, our soul mission, whatever you want to refer to it as, that thing that you were brought here to do and pursue, your magic and medicine to share with the world. So in the meantime, friends, keep your eyes wide open, and I'll see you back here next week.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.